Good evening or good morning, depending on when you're watching this, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our weekly Hoops HD report, recording live on tape delay here on Monday, January 18th, a little after 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern. I'm your host up here, Chad Sherwood, joined by Joby Fortson to my side, John Titel below me, and the puppet, unfortunately, back with us as well over there in the corner.
What do you mean, unfortunately? I'm the best one here. It's my genius that carries the show, despite what you say about my bracket, Chad.
Yeah, if you want to see a bad bracket, take a look at what David posted on our website today.
You want to see some bad comments, take a look at what Chad wrote about it.
let's go into that. We want to talk about a lot today. We want to most of what we're doing is going through the 10 major conferences, the power conferences, as long as five other conferences here from the Big East all the way down to the Mountain West and the like. But I guess what we need to do, though, is find a conference to start off with. And Joby, you being back with us this week, I think you were not with us last week, but I want to start in your conference and start with the ACC, you being a Virginia guy, because we'll get to what Florida State did tonight in a little bit here. But before that happened, Virginia was looked very impressive with an unbelievable showing on Saturday, beating a nationally ranked Clemson team on the road by 35 points.
There is the excuse of Clemson coming off the COVID pause and all that. But when you put up the 85 points that Virginia did against the number one scoring defense walking in, defense is supposed to, at least it's already occurring, should be able to start back up without much of an issue. Virginia showed that the good play that led into that, the wins over lesser ACC competition, were not a fluke. The fact is they have numerous scoring from three, from several positions. Basically, all five position groups can score from three. And that, everybody's talking the offense whenever you hear the talking heads, 85, 80, that's great. I don't know if that'll continue all for, again, every game. I mean, I don't think Virginia's going to hit over 50% threes in every game. The encouraging thing is the defense. I mean, that game was over possibly at the second TV timeout because the score is 18-2, 26-5. It was a domination from the beginning, and it was led from the defensive side of the ball. And that's what we've gotten used to know about Virginia. And what was not happening, even in some of those other games, like the first Notre Dame game, et cetera, the defense, the Wake Forest game, you still had, I don't know about this defense. The offense is better, but the defense might not be the same Virginia. I'm not saying this defense is as good as last year's, which I think is one of the best ever, or the national title year. But it is a traditional, typical Virginia defense back there within the same range. You're going to see the KenPom numbers move. If Virginia plays defensively like they did against Clemson, they're not going to have as many up and down roller coaster off nights. And then the offense can then provide the added boost to maybe make this Virginia team special.
I got to say, Joby, that they do also have the something that is number one in the nation as the number one slowest tempo below even start playing this year. That's 3.7 ranks below the Ivy League. But
it was pointed out, what is an interesting point out on that. All right, so you score 85 with that lowest tempo. The blowout at Gonzaga is something that we should all be talking at in regards to the Zags, how they dominate this same Virginia team. Despite the Zags scoring 98 against Virginia with that lowest tempo, Virginia actually had 0.2 points more per possession in the Clemson game than the Zags did against Virginia. That should tell you how the offense really was clicking.
About that, Joby, again, Clemson is also a really good defensive team, and Virginia was able to put up 85 against them, so that's good. But it is a little discouraging. I think at the under 8 timeout, Clemson only had 3 points, and from that point on, they proceeded to Virginia just could not hold them at that pace. I mean, in fact, they scored 47 points from that point on. Is Tony Bennett losing it? Is he on the hot seat?
What's interesting is the Clemson shutout was they were shut out from a field goal for over 10 minutes in the first half.
It was very impressive. Another team that is playing well, Tytel, although they struggled but did win at Wake Forest, coming off a win over Duke earlier the week. Also, Virginia Tech now sitting, according to these standings, at least in second place right now.
Arguably the best team in the Commonwealth of Virginia, although Joby would put up a fight with that. Not too impressive with a single-digit win at Wake. Single-digit win over Duke. And the other year, impressive this year, we'll see, 11-2 overall. Had they not blown an early 11-0 lead at Louisville 2 weeks ago, we'd be talking about a 12-1 team. They host BC on Wednesday, then head to Syracuse on Sunday. Very nice blend of experience. Two sophomores, two juniors, one senior in the starting five. My big concern, there's only one guy taller than 6'7", so I think they can get beat up inside by bigger teams. And this is not Uncle Buzz's team. This is Coach Mike Young. Last year, first year, 16-16, very mediocre. This series really taking it up a notch. I currently have them as a number 7 seed.
Yeah, I'm liking the Virginia Tech team. Now, David, I know you loved them in the bracket this morning. I want to talk to you about a different team, actually, because we just saw
the voters.
We just saw Florida State look as good as almost any team has looked this season, and just you know, I mean, Louisville stayed down by 10, but they never made a run tonight. After earlier beating North Carolina over the weekend, this Florida State team is suddenly playing very, very good basketball, and is way better than not being rated in the AP poll and only 25 of the coaches poll, I think, aren't they?
Very much so. And again, they have really kicked it in the gear lately. I really thought that they were going to be good. I was big on them in the preseason, and while their record is impressive, I don't think that they were playing at this level until the last week or two. They look as good as, minus Virginia, anyone in the conference the way they're going now. And Louisville was a little bit anemic, and not just tonight but in the last two games, and maybe that's worth noting too. But to be fair to Florida State, they just played phenomenally tonight.
Yeah, Louisville coming off a bad loss over the weekend to Miami, that was did not help their profile at all. And one other thing we got to discuss, Tytel, let me ask you this. I know you're a bit of you like some of this history here. One thing we see when we look at these standings here is North Carolina, zero votes in either of the top 25 polls. Duke, not in the top 25. By the way, Kentucky is not in the top 25. We're going back to 1963 since those three teams were not in the top in either poll. Where is this just wild this season that these three teams have fallen apart?
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is historic when you have to go back to something that happened before I was born. I think it's a combination of when you have very young teams who are just bringing a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans every year, they get impacted the most, I think, by not having enough practice time both before and during the season. But again, like if you look at the J&G for each, like, Joby, like, this is not just a fluke. Like, these are not some of the best teams in the country, right?
No, they're not playing well at all. I mean, I think Carolina has some hope. But I mentioned before that the Kentucky situation is they were very much hit by the COVID because Calipari depends on that preseason to develop his defense. But sooner or later, the one and dones weren't going to be all, you know, Zion Williamson and, you know, and Towns and these, you know, one and dones we're used to. Like I said, I still have hope for the Tar Heels that they can actually come back and make it. And Duke, we just don't know about. We don't know yet, but the early returns on Duke are disappointing if you're a Blue Devils fan. You know, they lose to Virginia Tech, and they should have lost to some of the dregs in the ACC. They skated by.
I've got up here, David, the upcoming schedule for the week. One thing you can cross off: Wednesday's NC State at Virginia game. That game has already been postponed. As far as I know, everything else on the schedule is still on as of now, although I'm sure we'll lose a few more. But
yeah,
when we look at this, something that's really sticking out to you?
Well, tomorrow's Duke and Pittsburgh game, because Pitt, we haven't really talked about them yet. We were very quick to dismiss them when they lost their season opener to St. Francis U. But since then, they've looked really good. And they've incrementally, it feels like they're getting better and better and better. So to build on what we just said about Duke, like that one tomorrow is not going to be easy, and I think Pitt's going to win it and continue to kind of improve.
Well, I got to say, David, also for Duke, if they can win that and then they got Saturday at Louisville, that totally turns the season around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They win both of these, then the complexion totally changes. Clemson, sort of a bounce-back game at Georgia Tech, a Georgia Tech team that's good at sometimes, and then they go to Florida State for oof. So,
in my opinion, the ACC MVP of the year candidate right now. Yeah. The only player in the country averaging over 18 points and 12 boards a game. That's pretty good with Champagne. That's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm.
Let's jump over to the Big East now also because we look at a team here at the top of the Big East standings where they have been for a month. And a month ago, they were 8-1. And a month ago, they were 3-0 in conference. And they're pretty much still there. Villanova has not found a way to get in the court. Now, allegedly, Joby, Villanova is scheduled to play tomorrow night against Seton Hall. But I have a trouble. When I'm trying to evaluate a team right now, I don't know what to do with a team that just doesn't have the quantity of games that everyone else has. It's really weird.
If there are two teams, I'm going to go with the one who's played more games. But Villanova has played 9, and I know that sounds funny to say, but there are a lot of teams who don't have 9 in. The Virginia team we were just lauding, has only played 11. So it's not like they're dramatically behind others. In addition, yes, the Texas win means a lot. Given that they play in the Big East, where half the conference are very solid, tournament candidates or in the tournament, as it were, right now. Villanova will get their chances, will be able to evaluate. I'm not panicking, and I will go with what they've done to date without penalizing. But at the end of the year, if all of a sudden a Texas or some of these other very viable number one seeds, I have Villanova as a number one right now. If some of these other number one seeds who wind up playing 8 more games than they did and collect, from that 6 more quality wins, those 6 more quality wins are going to drive Villanova out. But for now, I will let Villanova rest on what they've done. But, man, they have to get those games.
And David, when you look at the Big East here this week, there's not that many games even that got in. The games that did get in, we saw some upsets, some head-scratcher upsets with Creighton losing to Butler, with UConn and UConn to St. John's today. Yeah,
particularly the Creighton-Butler game. The UConn-St. John's game, UConn kind of blew it. They completely mismanaged the end of the game. We were talking about that before we came onto the show. It's certainly one they should have won. But Butler has not looked – good at all, at least not compared to Creighton. I'm still surprised at that result.
Butler's look like dog poop.
I mean, yeah,
except for this.
Let's not use words here. They've been awful.
Tytel, Seton Hall back in action this week. They've got at Villanova, as we already mentioned, then at Butler coming up.
Yeah, another team that is easing into conference play. They didn't play last week. Their only loss since Christmas was at Creighton on January 6th. So 9-5 sounds good. Very rough schedule ahead. As Chad said, supposed to play at Villanova on Tuesday in the Which Team Looks Rustier game. And then next week they host Creighton and Villanova again. So very tough stretch for them. They really need a healthy Bryce Akin. As much as the team depends on Mamu Kelechvili inside, they're 4-0 when Akin plays at least 10 minutes a game and 5-5 when he doesn't. I have them right on the bubble now as an 11 seed.
As far as this upcoming schedule, see Wednesday, Xavier, UConn, Georgetown, Marquette. Cross both those games off already. They're already been canceled, which is a shame for a Marquette team, actually, that David, they did have the big week, picking up a pair of wins, including being Providence, and they're not going to play again until next Saturday now.
Right, and again, not that Providence is a top 10 win. They've already got two of those, but like Marquette, real schizophrenic this year. Beating anyone helps bring some stability to a profile on a season that's just – again, the range between the quality of their wins and the horrendousness of their losses is probably bigger than anyone else in the country.
But a 2-0 week is always helps when you're in
that type of situation. Yeah, but a 2-0 week, always helps that situation.
I want to add on this because Marquette, I mentioned a few weeks ago, they will get opportunities five opportunities against those bottom three in the Big East.
That's the problem.
But if you don't get to play them, your overall record remains at a kind of gross 8-6 that then projects to be 14-12. 14-12 probably doesn't get you in over when you look across the country at maybe a Pac-12 team that has 18-19-20 wins. Maybe not the quality that they are, but they've distanced themselves, and then they have a win against a Stanford and a UCLA or what have you.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, let's jump over to the Big 12, which I already pulled up there for a second, then jump back. But Tytel, let me start with you here in the Big 12, because as we record this right now, the huge Kansas-Baylor game is going on. We're going to be done long before that game goes final. Baylor was out to a big lead early. But the team that had the very interesting, I thought a very good week, despite only 1-1, was Texas Tech here.
I couldn't agree more. I just talked about Seton Hall's schedule upcoming. Texas Tech had their brutal thing last week, a 2-point win at Texas with the Mac McClung Georgetown transfer 3 to win it, and then the 8-point loss at Baylor, which is more respectable than anybody else because all Baylor is doing is beating teams by double digits this year, 11-4 overall. Great interior defense, as Chris Beard usually does, only 44% allowed from 2-point range. I think the X factor on this team is a guy we haven't talked about, Kevin McCullough, mostly because he's missed the first 9 games of the season with a high ankle sprain. Since coming back, he's been great off the bench. 11 points a game, 8 total blocks, 8 total steals in his first 6 games. I have them as a 5 seed right now.
I agree. I think they are right there. I think they're right on the border of being a top 4 seed. Beyond that, Joe, the other game of note was way back to last Tuesday, but Oklahoma State getting the win over Kansas, and this and the Cowboys now, assuming they are going to be postseason eligible,
Pull them up.
I'll pull them up because David's chanting on it. But Joby, what about this Cowboys team?
We're going to talk about projected number one pick overall, Cade Cunningham, when we talk Oklahoma State, and it's well deserved. He and Jalen Suggs are going to duel it out for that title. But Oklahoma State is more than that. When you look at the resume, it's not just a flashy name on it. That Oklahoma State has put together. We just talked about that Marquette team that's schizophrenic. Well, that wasn't a bad loss for Marquette because Oklahoma State's good. You know, Wichita State is a borderline tournament team. Kansas, wow. Texas Tech, yes, very good. Texas and West Virginia are not embarrassing losses by any stretch because they're competing for protected seed spots or a number one seed spot in the case of Texas. Yeah, TCU 1-point loss, that's not the best thing in the world. But the fact of the matter is this Oklahoma State team, I didn't think even with the postseason ban that they'd be good enough because we've seen it so many times. Cade Cunningham is the next Fultz, Washington didn't make it. Georgia didn't make it. I mean, these guys,
right.
These teams who bring in these great players, but Oklahoma State is a better overall team. It's a better coached team. Let's be very blunt here. And this is a tournament team, assuming they are eligible.
This team, look at the top of that profile. There's two things I wanted to point out here. And one is the top of the profile at Texas Tech, Kansas, both probably protected seeds. Wichita State also really good in certainly improving. Marquette, schizophrenic like we talked about. But the games they've lost by 3 points at Texas. Texas, a one seed or a two, depending on where you have them, still very good. Another 3-point loss to what they've lost 3 games. Two of them to protected seedish teams by a total of 7 points. This team is even better than what their paper indicates, I think. This team is really good.
I would say that we find out a little bit more about them tomorrow night when they go to West Virginia, but we're not because and that's the games that have been canceled.
Grief!
But Baylor coming up this weekend. God. As of the moment, the Oklahoma State-Baylor game is on for this weekend, so we'll be able to look forward to that. A few other games coming up here in the Big 12, as the schedule should be populated on the screen there, we do have K-State, Texas, Iowa State, that's off. Texas Tech at TCU.
No, it's not off. It's on the screen. If it's on the screen, it means we're playing. That's the new rule.
How about Kansas at Oklahoma on Saturday? That could be a very interesting game here. This Oklahoma team, not one we've discussed much so far this year, but I think there's a little bit of life there. And, after what Kansas did at Oklahoma State, who knows?
Yeah.
Let's jump over to the let's go over to the Big Ten. And We should begin. There's some scores coming up here. And Titella, we had a very impressive week for Ohio State here with the road win at Illinois, as well as a 10-point win over Northwestern.
You might have thought they were just a football school, but I assure you they're not. When you beat Northwestern at home and Illinois on the road to improve to 11-3, it doesn't get any easier this week. They host Purdue on Tuesday, then at Wisconsin for a huge game on Saturday, COVID permitting. The most amazing part is they're doing this without their senior point guard. C.J. Walker's been out for three games in a row, torn ligaments in his right thumb. They throw Justin Arnes into the starting lineup in the past two games. He's made 7 of 10 threes. Unstoppable from behind the line. I have them as a 4 seed right now.
Wow, 4 seed. That's even higher than I would have had them. David, what about Michigan? What about Minnesota? Because I did not see that game coming, no matter how well Minnesota's been playing at home this year.
Yeah, that was really impressive. Where I am with them is, we're all going to evaluate them the same. At least we're going to assess them the same. They're amazing at home and they're awful on the road. Now, where does that land them on the S curve? To me, you have to do something away from home, at least something. Like, they've done absolutely nothing. But yeah, winning at Minnesota is becoming like winning at Kansas or winning at Gonzaga. Well, maybe not Gonzaga, but winning at Baylor, places that you just don't go into and win. That's how good they've been at home. They just obliterated a top 10 caliber Michigan team.
And look, and just look at the games they've won at some point. I mean, this team's in.
Yeah, they're beating one seed.
Even if they don't do jack on the road, they're in the tournament. It's not like, and sorry, Chad, it's not like Rutgers last year. The top end of this resume is just, you just drop. And I don't care where you beat Luka Garza. I don't care where you beat a number one contending seeded Michigan team. You're freaking deserving of a very serious look at wearing white, let alone being in this place, even though you haven't done much on the road.
Nothing on the road, but
look at who they've lost to on the road, too. Yeah, you got to win some, but every one of those teams is, what are those Nets? 3, 5, 9, 15. It's not an embarrassing.
That is a really good point. If they do not win on Wednesday, that is a problem.
David, they're not going to win on Wednesday. That game.
That's a huge problem. I mean, I still.
I presume they will pick up, you know, the Penn State win or something where along the way, and we can cancel it out, and then we will gladly look at the rest. But this team. That Michigan, this wasn't a fluke. No, that day, Michigan walked in and got their rear ends handed to them by the Gophers. And this is not your ordinary Michigan team. This is a number one seed contender. Even after the Minnesota loss, it's a number one seed contender.
Yeah, that Michigan was coming off a huge win over Wisconsin earlier in the week. When we look ahead this week, too, we've got, just a ton of good games here, because I think we're going to have all season, but we've got Maryland and Michigan. We've got a Purdue team that's playing well at Ohio State just coming up tomorrow night. We've got, we have Indiana at Iowa on Thursday, Michigan at Purdue on Friday, Ohio State, Wisconsin Saturday. You can pretty much circle this entire Big Ten schedule here.
Minnesota at Nebraska on Wednesday. It's on the screen. That's the new rule.
You could also cross off the Nebraska-Iowa game from Sunday. Nebraska is in a shutdown.
Well, this would have never happened if Tim Miles were still there. That's all I'm saying.
Let's go over to the Pac-12 conference. And, Joby, I want to start with you at the top of this conference where I guess we got to talk about both Southern Cal teams.
Just UCLA,
you know, only played the Washington schools, but they did what they needed to do, and most and
they
more or less
Washington. I will.
Yeah, they did. Okay.
They actually probably should have lost to an awful Washington.
Yeah.
But I look beyond what happened this past week, or earlier. I think what they've done throughout the year has shown that something special's happening. Something special is happening with the coaching and the gelling. I think UCLA has the potential to build on, not the wooden, and even the Brown era, but this they can become, along with Arizona, Titel, to being the top of the Pac-12 consistently year in, year out. I think they finally found their coach now that Alford's out the door. Good for them. And, I really like Johnny Juzang. He is showing why he was a five-star and Kentucky kid before the transfer, and he's transferred back home, so he's more comfortable. He's doing the job there. He's given that extra oomph. UCLA, yeah, you lost to San Diego State. It's not looking as good anymore, but it was early in the season. I like UCLA a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
And Tytel, I know your Arizona team is highlighted there in red, and so you're not going to get a chance to see them in the NCAA tournament this year, assuming they could have made it anyhow. But at least I think you're taking some solace from what's going on with your rivals at Arizona State.
So it's the only solace I have, but it's filling the void, I assure you. I mean, this is a Sun Devil team. They have not lost five games in a row in 10 years, since 2011. They host the Wildcats on Thursday with a chance to tie that mark as they come in on a four-game losing streak. It's hard to believe. Their only home win all season this year, over Houston Baptist back in November. Houston Baptist now 2-10. Horrible team, somehow. The only home win. They've been hammered by COVID and injuries. They've only had two guys for Coach Hurley who've played all 10 of their games this year. And Remy Martin went from preseason All-American to 0-12 from behind the arc since his team last won a game. I have them around a 23 seed right now.
Well, I do feel sad for someone like Remy Martin, who was probably going to be drafted, maybe not first round, but was probably going to get at least a second round call. This year, he might be in a situation where he's not getting that call, and I hate to see that for anybody. I know there's only so many people who can be drafted, but I hate that for anybody in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, Arizona State losing to Oregon, I mean, just not good. But David, one other team that had a rough week was Stanford. We were really liking
them.
I can excuse the Colorado loss, but the Utah loss just –
Well, they needed to get one of them. They went on to that trip with a huge sense of urgency, as any team that's kind of, straddling the bubble would. Didn't get either one of them. Colorado, absolutely a tournament team, probably wearing white in the round of 64. But to not get either win, it really hurts, and you start to wonder what side of the bubble is Stanford on. I just wanted to say just real quick, I can't help it. I agree with everything Joby said. This could be a really good UCLA team. I could see them top 15, top 10 finishes every year and losing in the round of 32 every year under Mick Cronin.
Because that's Mick Cronin.
Yes.
Jamie Dixon, either you got Dixon, you got Cronin. Yeah, they're basically the same results when it comes out, except Dixon with his alma mater will not be seeing the tournament as often.
Right. Yeah.
I would be saying that there's only one game in this upcoming schedule to really circle coming up tomorrow night, but that game is already off. It's the UCLA-Oregon game. Oregon's still in their shutdown, so it's just not a very good looking week here. Maybe UCLA at Stanford and USC and UCLA at Stanford are the two best games on this schedule, though, for this week.
Probably. I'm certainly looking forward to that Utah-Wazoo game.
the worst part is he's serious. Let's jump over to the SEC. Where the continuing story here, Joby, and I know you've got some ties to the school, so I got to go to you for them. The continuing story is the Crimson Tide. Not only having a good week in football, kind of taking up a national championship, but, continuing their undefeated SEC play.
Nate Oates. I thought when Nate Oates replaced Avery Johnson, I thought, probably cut the cord too quickly on Avery Johnson. Probably should give him another year. No. It's short. They got the right guy at the right school. Even stands up to Coach K, which, not everybody does. So they put together not just when they win. I mean, the Kentucky win we could talk about. I actually thought the Arkansas game was the one that really should welcome everybody to Alabama. Wow. It wasn't even that close. And it this team is balanced. They have defense. They have offense, as evidenced by, I bet if you pull them up, their KenPom balance, offensive defense, the balance is so awesome. 22-16, or 21-16. Wow, that's the sort of team that Alabama is. Do I think I still like Tennessee probably a little more, even though Alabama walked into Knoxville with a win, but this team is to be reckoned with wearing white, and who knows, they make the run through the SEC that they are right now and continue it, we can maybe be talking about a protected seed possibly.
Oh, yeah, I think they certainly can. I would have given them – I think I just gave them one.
Yeah.
You know, all –
I want to go to – yeah.
There's a lot of trash in the SEC that could bring them down, and I could see this team lose a game that they're not supposed to down the road, like a home Mississippi State in a week, you know, for instance.
Yeah, the other team I pulled up here on the right is a team that, we just haven't really discussed much this season, and they've just been kind of – bland in the middle, but you know, does this LSU team start really? Should we be giving a lot more attention than we have, or maybe not? I don't know. This is one of those teams I just don't know anything about. Maybe you can fill me in.
I will, because if you look at Tier 1, there's a big gaping hole. So that's why you're correct that we don't need to worry about them just yet. But if you look at the schedule, you see they play the team on the left coming up on January 19th. So arguably the biggest Alabama-LSU basketball game that I can ever remember. They're 10-2. Their only two losses are both Tier 1 and both by 4 points on the road. So very close to perfection. The offense is amazing. Top 60 in the nation in shooting percentage from both one-point land and two-point land and three-point land. Great offense. The Alabama game Tuesday could be the favorite to win the conference, which seems impossible, but it's true. None of their top eight scorers are seniors. So if they all return next year, we could be talking about a very special team. Not that they're chopped liver this year, because they're not. I have them as an 8 seed right now because of that gaping hole in Tier 1. But if they beat Alabama, keep moving them up the ladder.
Yeah, they will have Alabama again on the road. But, you know, Tennessee, they only get once, and it's a home game. Very interesting, though. Texas Tech is their opponent in the Big 12 challenge. So that's that's a game we can actually circle in that challenge more than maybe one of the premier games of that challenge as we move towards it.
Probably so, yeah.
David, beyond that, you know, Florida is a team that suddenly is just, you know, unfortunately, because of you know, what happened with Keontae, but it's just been a team that's heading very much in the wrong direction.
Right. When you look at what happened on the court, you can probably attribute it to a lot of what's going on off the court and what happened with Keontae Johnson and just, you know, trying to get back into a flow after that and not being able to is understandable. But you have to evaluate what's on paper. I think, Tytel, our committee guessing expert, would agree with that. And what's on paper just isn't there. And they don't look that good on the court either. Kentucky blasted them. Now, could they rebound? I mean, they certainly have. It is within their capability to kind of bounce back and string together some wins and get themselves solidly back into the picture. But right now, when I see them, when I'm doing the write-ups, you just kind of skip over them. There's just nothing really there right now.
With the Alabama, with the upcoming series, the Alabama-LSU game, I think it's the game of the week in this conference. But also circle the Tennessee-Florida game. Take a look at LSU at Kentucky, Missouri at Tennessee on Saturday.
Tennessee would have, 3 weeks ago, we would have been screaming about Missouri-Tennessee as an amazing showdown. And I think Missouri, you know, because of the loss, recent loss, gets forgotten about. But don't forget that they, out of conference, put together a suite of wins that was having us talking top 10 with a very straight face.
Yeah, well, they're still ranked 19th. I mean, they're still, you know, not to be forgotten or skipped over.
Joe, let me go back to you here first, jump over to the West Coast Conference. And as always, we've got to talk about the number one team in the nation. And maybe that's all we're going to really talk about in this conference. We'll have a couple of teams we'll mention briefly. But Gonzaga, not covering the spread. No, but Gonzaga. Gonzaga continues to roll here.
They missed covering the spread because of a missed alley-oop with 5 seconds to go, because they brought in, I'm forgetting the sub that they brought in. They did it. They gave him an alley-oop. They would have covered the 16. He missed the dunk.
but still, this guy, this Zags team. Yes, played one of their worst games of the year at St. Mary's and still won 73-59.
And still almost covered the spread. It's funny as that. Still. But this is the toughest road game, along with BYU, that they're going to face in the conference. And they still struggling. By early on, I'm talking the 10-minute mark of the first half. They were down, as I remember. But and Kispert was off. He wasn't hitting his shots like he normally does. they just grinded it out with that. Jalen Suggs was proved that game everything about all the plaudits, because he ran that team like a general and really spaced things out and dissected, getting Timmy his shots here and there. And so, and I think scored, I forget what his point total was pretty good. And that shows how dangerous this team is. They walked into one of their toughest remaining road tests, did not play at their best. Their best player, who I do believe is Kispert, their best player had an off night, a flat out off night for him. But yet, they still had no. They were not breathing heavy with, you know, at the 8 minutes to go TV timeout.
Right, they were, and I mean, David.
Yeah,
another team with a big week was BYU, also winning at St. Mary's and a win at a pretty good San Francisco team. A big week for BYU, picking up those two road wins.
Yeah, two really solid wins, two decent wins. Whenever you win two road games like that, in my opinion, it gives your resume a boost. I think BYU is, you know, establishing themselves as a solid tournament team that will be blown out by Gonzaga whenever they play them, but probably beat everybody else.
Yeah.
A quick question about Gonzaga. I'm just kind of curious. My observation from the St. Mary's game, even though it was a C-minus performance and they were lackadaisical, it was simply that they didn't play very well. It looked like at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the game, excuse me, a team that was a little bit bored with their season. It's just kind of monotonous, and it's hard to get up for game after game after game when you can't really look at it as a chance to climb higher than you already are. I think we see that a lot from teams, especially when you get in the late January and February sort of. But despite that, they still won easily. I mean, a sign of a good team is a team that can have an off game, make adjustments, and still win easily.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't disagree with you one bit here. One other team, though, Titel, other than Gonzaga, the second best overall winning percentage does not belong to BYU. It belongs to another team, Ohio Pacific.
How about a strength of schedule of an 11 and a KPI of 15? Like, I know it's early, but numbers can't lie that much, can they?
This yes.
Team finished November with the road loss at Nevada. Won undefeated since November. Two big wins in December. Two more in January to improve to 5-1. They might win at Pepperdine on Thursday. They're not going to win on Saturday at Gonzaga, I admit it. Bad free throw shooting team, only 64%. Fortunately, their opponents are just as bad with 64% from the line. Sophomore Dennis Jenkins, he finished last season with six straight games in single digits. Started this year, six straight games in double digits. I like guys who can make the leap from year one to year two. I have them a little outside the bubble right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things is when you see these small numbers of games, only five D1 games, it throws off some of these metrics, especially the KPI metric.
Big time.
You know, it's what we're seeing with Colgate being a top 20 net team right now.
Because I think to the net, at least to half of the net, and Joby probably knows more about it than I do, 4-1 is basically the same as, you know, 24-4.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what it sees. So,
well, 24-6.
24, yeah, excuse me, 24.
Matt Steele. Okay, yep. Yeah. And exactly right. And, you know,
said I wasn't good at math.
I mean, it's not like, you know, hey, it's not, I'm not going to criticize any program because, computer program in that regard, because I have a similar issue, you know, when you pull up Drake and Winthrop and St. Bonaventure being too high based on a similar situation. But you got to show some gap between your wins and losses and raw numbers. And Pacific only, and against D1 teams, only has, you know, 4-1 as a gap rule is the same as 10-7. You know, so yeah. It's not, yeah. And Pacific, I think we're Pacific, you know, they've only beaten Santa Clara of note. So, we spent way too much time on Pacific, but
let's move on.
This will be the most they ever do, because they are, at least in my view, no better than, I'd say, sixth in this conference behind San Francisco.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have a lot bigger discussion. I'll tell you what, guys, we're going to have a lot bigger discussion next week about Pacific if they win Saturday at Gonzaga, which I don't know.
They're in the field if they do that.
The other games noteworthy, BYU has a pair of home games against Portland and Pepperdine, but I want to keep things moving here over to the American. And Tata, let me go back to you in the American, because the team that I, a couple weeks ago, I even buzzed Stalika for even mentioning them, and I think I was wrong. Wichita State is winning games and keeps winning games, and you know, in a season where they didn't even have a head coach, you know, 2.5 months ago.
I don't think you're wrong. They were 6-3 last week, and then now they're 8-3 because they beat Cincinnati and Tulsa. Their only loss in the past month was by 7 at Houston. That's a good schedule. Now they travel to Memphis on Thursday. We'll see how they do. Let me take you back 5 years ago. Their point guard, Altre Gilbert, he was a McDonald's All-American with fellow honorees like Bam Adebayo and Jason Tatum. At the start of the season, he was a scoring point guard. The past three games, he's turned into a passer. He only scored 9 points in his past three games, but he's passing a lot, 5 assists a game. I have them outside the bubble right now.
And their big win was their win over Tulsa, David, a Tulsa team that we had been really liking and did bounce back with a win, albeit only by 1 point over Memphis.
Yeah, not exactly the most impressive win. But, yeah, Tulsa, all in all, if you look at their profile, pretty good. They got the win against Houston. There's enough there to where if they can continue to string together wins and continue to hold serve, there's going to – I think that they're at least in a discussion, and maybe more than just in a discussion. But, yeah, I've been paying attention to this Wichita State team for a while. They really got my attention when they – especially this past week. And – their next four or five, I mean, you look down the list here, every game looks winnable.
They do. In fact, the big game that coming up this week is not going to be on Wichita State's profile. It's going to be on Tulsa's profile. Joby, the revenge game is coming up, allegedly. Tulsa now going to Houston.
I think unless Houston has a mental block, Houston's going to smash them. Houston's good. I've been chanting about this Houston team all year. I love – maybe it's because I just love defense, and look at the adjusted D for Kenpom on top of, you know, the tempo being slow. Ooh, that sounds a lot like Wisconsin and Virginia, doesn't it? but they are – but Houston's legit. I think they have spacing. They have depth. This is I think the first Tulsa game was a bit of an anomaly. Congratulations, Tulsa. That was a good win. Even with a loss here, if Frank Haith and company make a solid run in the conference, that Houston win might actually pull them across the finish line for a bid if they really put up a gaudy record. But Houston's Houston. Houston's a 2 seed right now. I'm on the Houston Cougars bandwagon on that one.
Let's jump over to the Mountain West. And, Tytel, let me start with you, because the story of the week in the Mountain West had to do with Utah State, a team that didn't have much in their profile but had a couple chances. And they got San Diego State, who we thought was the best team in the conference, at home twice this week. And it went pretty well for the Aggies.
It's been a really weird season. This team lost 3 of their first 4. Now they won 10 in a row to get to 11-3. Arguably the best week of anyone in the country when you beat San Diego State back-to-back. This is a San Diego State team. They lost 2 games all of last year by a combined 6 points. Great interior defense, only 42% allowed from two-point range. Decent chance that we could see, God willing, an Aggies team that has an 18-game winning streak at the Boise next month to face a Broncos team that has won 20 in a row, and they play twice in 3 nights. I hope it happens like that. Very good mix. 4 juniors and 1 freshman in the starting lineup. Coach Craig Smith, he's really goes under the radar nationally, I think. He's won 77% of his games, 91 of his past 118. I have them outside the bubble right now, but that could change very quickly.
Yeah, they do have to get through a pair of home games against a Colorado State team first before they get there. And Colorado State won at San Diego State. They split their 2 games there.
Right.
In epic fashion, as we've been able to remember, David.
Yeah. Just echoing what you were saying and what Tytel was saying about Utah State. They are the defending conference champs.
They are.
They've beaten San Diego State 3 games in a row.
We see Boise State up there as well. Boise's let's go ahead and pull up this, the upcoming schedule. In fact, Joby, when we look ahead this week, we mentioned already the Colorado State Utah State game. Boise State has a little bit easier. They've got Fresno State at home.
Yeah, and Boise, Boise's put up the gaudy record. They have the BYU win, and that's huge for them because it gives this ounce of credibility to this record that they will continue, I think, because they're so consistent in how they play, that they will continue to pile up. I really wish – this is where – Boise's one of those teams I really wish COVID hadn't have, interfered, because I'd like more of that out of – I'd really like a even greater out-of-conference slate.
Oh, yeah.
For them, I don't know what Pac-12 games might have been canceled for them off the top of my head, or even just a bunch of West Coast Conference games, et cetera. There are teams that I would like to see that comparative. Now, right now for Boise, unfortunately, we're talking BYU, which is great. Yeah, that's a great win. And Sam Houston State. Boise, though, I think their consistency, they have it in front of them. Right now, this is a multiple bid league. Part of that is because Boise has the win over BYU, San Diego State has the win over UCLA, and that helps buoy an entire conference when there aren't a lot of connected dots among the various conferences.
Yeah, really would like to see more out of conference from Boise, but again, we can't fault it this, especially.
You can't. But okay. They've got it noticed in front of them. Boise's, gotten some of the easy ones, but they got Colorado State, Utah State, San Diego State, and a tricky at Nevada pair.
Last conference for the night is going to be the Atlantic 10. A conference where, the best team in the conference is sitting there at 0-0 in St. Louis in this fun little COVID year we've got this year. David, the Bonnies are finally starting to play, and they're picking up wins, albeit, at Fordham and home over Duquesne, not beating, any great teams, but 6-1 is 6-1 still.
Yeah, it is. I like the St. Bonaventure team. When you look at their paper, as you well know, there just isn't a whole lot to look at, and they're really hard to evaluate. But my feeling is, as they start to get games against, VCU and Richmond and St. Louis, that you hope that they can pick up. What's that? Go ahead.
They beat in Richmond.
Yeah, they did beat. They did win that game in Richmond. Yeah. That is one.
I'll pull that profile
up. Yeah, I'll pull the profile up. But is this a school that, and again, there's a lot. The one thing, as you know from under the radar, there's a lot of teams in that part of the country that have had trouble getting games. Could they try and sandwich in a few more out-of-conference games to give a little more shape to their resume?
The problem with that is they've already had a few conference games postponed. They've got to make them up. You're going to prefer making up conference games versus non-conference games. So,
and depending on who it's against.
Yeah, I think the conference is going to be free for the conference games.
Would they like to drive the 3 to 4 hours to Charlottesville and play on them?
they probably would.
But if we talk about first place in this conference, Titel, St. Bonaventure is tied with UMass?
UMass, question mark indeed. This is a team who eased into the season in mid-December, lost 3 of their first 5, but they've won 3 in a row to get back up there. They're tied with the Bonnies atop the conference. It's hard to believe. Their 3 losses were by a combined 9 points somehow, despite the fact that their opponents are only shooting 64% from the line. And Trey Mitchell is a sophomore. He was a conference rookie of the year as a freshman. He could be conference player of the year as a sophomore, averaging 21 points and 7 boards a game. I have them outside the bubble despite their great record.
Well, you didn't mention that their 3 losses were Northeastern, Bryant, and George Mason. That's why they are
outside the bubble. Interesting about this is, they are the perfect example of why we talk about Marquette being schizophrenic. There may not be a truly more schizophrenic team than Rhode Island. who lost to this UMass team, but then goes out and they beat Seton Hall. They beat a VCU team that is very competitive. They gave the Bonnies their only loss. They beat San Francisco, who beat Virginia. I mean, it's like Rhode Island, what are you doing? It's like, well, they actually had a decent out of conference run if you look at the wins and not the losses.
If we want to talk about St. Louis, maybe still hanging in there in the top 25, barely in the AP poll, despite not having played in forever. Finally supposed to be back on the court Wednesday at the UMass team we were just discussing. Yeah. So, and then they've got the Bonnies coming up on Saturday. So it's a very interesting week for the Billikens, assuming they do get onto the court. That is two of their more interesting games of the A-10 season coming up this week. But I guess on that note, that's all 10 conferences I've got on my list here. So let's go ahead and pull this down and run through any other final thoughts that you may have. And Joby, let me start with you.
Yeah, no, we did see a little bit of quasi-history this weekend when Virginia beat I got to go to a Virginia fact if I can, and it's relevant, beating Clemson by 35 on the road. That is the largest home road win over a ranked team since 1993. Long time. And it's the second largest ever. Ironically, that 1993 game was won by UConn, one of those great UConn teams as it was up and coming, over Virginia. And what makes it even funnier is the color man for the Clemson-Virginia game was a gentleman named Corey Alexander. The reason that UConn game was such a blowout is because Corey Alexander was Virginia's best player, All-American candidate, broke his ankle in the first 5 minutes. And so needless to say, when that popped up, Corey Alexander did not want to talk about that stuff.
I tell.
Well, I usually like to end on happy notes, and this is not necessarily a sad note, but like I'm really starting to get worried about Patrick Ewing's hot seat at Georgetown. The team is 3-8. They've lost 5 in a row. He's got Creighton coming up back-to-back in early February, then Villanova on the road. This team, I don't know if they're going to win 10 games this year. And, like, I like Coach Ewing a lot, and I like the team, even though they're not getting it done on the court. And he's arguably the most famous alum in the school's history. So I think his job is safe, but I'm really starting to get nervous.
I'm fairly certain his job is safe, at least going in the next year.
David, before I get to you, just a couple of short updates. We're at the halftime right now, and Baylor is pounding Kansas rather impressively, actually. But the game is not finally up. But also going on right now as we record this, unfortunately, we've got Air Force down 12 to Wyoming. And if they could have come back, and if they can find a way to come back with this game, they will move into sole possession of first place in the Front Range Conference. So I just wanted to update everybody on that. So maybe Air Force can come back tonight, and by Wednesday night show, the Falcons will be in first place in the Front Range. But David, let me let you finish off the show.
Well, yeah, and as this week, as it is every week, COVID continuing to wreak havoc on schedules, on teams' abilities to get out onto the court, some more than others. But we mentioned St. Bonaventure in particular, but a lot of key games for teams are being postponed or canceled. So we're just, again, now more than ever, I was hoping that as the season played on, this would start to subside and we'd be seeing less and less of it. It doesn't seem like it is subsiding. If anything, it's picking up. You just hope that we can get through the season. Sometimes we come on, at least to me, it feels like you're just kind of figuring this out as you go. So, but it's still been fun being on these every week.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, it's almost become laughable when games get canceled. Not that it's for a serious reason, obviously, but it's like, up, there goes another game. But I do want to take the chance now, though, to thank everybody for joining us. We will be back Wednesday night with an Under the Radar podcast, Thursday night with a bracket rundown, next Monday with another Hoops HD report. But on behalf of Joby Fortson, John Titel, and the puppet David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.